Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, news and good sports. Tons of too much show today for you guys. First, I'll tell you about Dodge. Summer's the best time to join the Brotherhood of Muscle, Dodge Power Dollars. Now, here's how it works. $10 off based on the total horsepower of your new Dodge. So every 2020 Challenger, Durango, Charger, you can save $10 off of every horsepower. And I'll explain how that works. Enjoy the sweet sounds of the Dodge Charger SRT Scat Packs, 485 horsepower, and get, have you done the math, $4,850 off. See how it works? And summer power dollars are back on the Dodge Durango performance-driven SUV. Make summer trips a breeze. Fit everyone with the seven-passenger seating of the Durango. And save more money, get more power, get more power, get more off. It's simple. Hurry to your local Dodge dealer now and take advantage of the Dodge Power Dollars today.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
So Herman Cain, he was a one-time Republican presidential candidate and former CEO of Godfather's Pizza, which we had in the Midwest. I don't know how many other people are familiar with it. He has died from coronavirus, according to an obituary sent from his verified Twitter account. He was 74 and was hospitalized earlier this month. And his Twitter account said this week he was being treated with oxygen in his lungs. As a co-chair of Black Voices for Trump, Cain was one of the surrogates at President Trump's rally in Tulsa, June 20th, which saw at least eight Trump advance team staffers in attendance. They did test positive for coronavirus, though no one can confirm where Cain got it. Though Cain was vocal about not having to wear masks at the Tulsa rally and at the Mount Rushmore 4th of July festivities. In commentary videos for his website that aired in June, Cain called on Americans to wear face masks, saying that the guidance now shows its effectiveness.
He was, there's a lot of talk about him not wearing a mask, but the mask was always sold to me as preventing other people from getting you, not getting it.
Right.
So
well,
I guess he's around other people are not wearing it. It's really other people that's not wearing masks. The argument should be he hung around with people who didn't wear masks.
Yeah. And the distinction people say, I guess, you know, now that we're breaking it down more finely these days, there's between mask and face covering. Face covering's a bandana. You know, it's a courtesy. A mask is an N95 that'll keep you pretty safe. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I'm getting ready to go to Texas. By the way, everyone's freaked out about Texas. But as I was telling my family when I was explaining them I'm going to Texas, California's doing worse than Texas by the numbers I've seen. I mean, in terms of we're hotter than Texas right now as it pertains to this. The news is all about Texas, but California, statistically or from a pure number standpoint, you might be better off going to Texas.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
There's a number of ways to slice that. The most recent numbers I saw was that over the last 7 days, Texas and California had almost the same amount of cases, like 68,000 to 69,000. But California's population is 25% bigger than Texas's. So there's a number of ways to parse these numbers, but that would indicate that Texas is doing worse per capita.
It's marginal because I think there are a little lower new cases, but they're also higher.
I'm telling
higher.
You, the numbers, this could have been a couple of days ago, but there was 68,000.
I looked this morning. It was a little, it's kind of a lateral move is what I'm saying. Or you can, Max Paddock can look, see what's up there. It's semi-lateral. The point is all the talk is about Texas. California doesn't get the hype on the news. So everyone thinks going to Texas is bad, but if you live in California, it's essentially a lateral move. Now, how you get there on a Southwest jet, at least formally, that may be a different issue.
You don't have to worry about that.
No, well, flying private.
Speaking of that, this no longer applies to you, at least this trip, but this might be helpful, a helpful tip for us and for the listeners. On, you know, Teresa and I have a podcast, Easy Listening, and she found this show called Rich Roll, which I hadn't heard of. And it's an episode where they have a doctor named Dr. Grieger who talks about coronavirus. One of the things he talks about is like, well, what about the horrible air in the plane? And you want to make sure those vents are off. And the doctor says, no, 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 no. You want that vent on you. You want to take your neighbor's vents. You want to point them at you. And he said, essentially that, you know, they do have HEPA filters, which is very helpful. And the more air that's coming at you, it's coming off of you. So the air around you isn't staying stagnant. So if you could point those vents at yourself, you're blowing everything away from you. And it's helpful if you have to travel.
I actually have a clip right here from Ritual.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Just got Rickrolled.
Thing I thought of.
We have, and this is, I think it's a lateral move. California Associates Maxpat, as of 2 minutes ago, has almost 500,000 confirmed cases, 491, and about 9,000 deaths. And Texas has
423,000.
I have this thing. I don't know if you guys are with me. If anything can come from this thing, but when we're doing statistics and people are like, since March 23rd, there've been 4,826 new confirmed cases, and then there's 291. I want to get into a roundup era. I want everyone to go 300, 4,000. Yes. Because they start with March 27th. Yeah, they go, since the end of March, there was 200 deaths and 5,000 new cases. All there's a margin for error. It's baked in. I understand it, but I'm swimming in numbers. Anyway, yeah. California has like Texas has like three quarters the populace that California has. And they have 9,000 deaths, and Texas has 7,000 deaths. I'm rounding up, and they have 500,000 cases, and we have 400 and change. And the point is it is pretty adjusted for population. It's pretty lateral what we're going through and what they're going through. And who the fuck knows anything about this thing? I mean, went all the way through New York, went all the way through New Jersey. Now there's no problemos over there. Now the heat was going to kill it. Remember the heat was going to kill it?
Oh, yeah. That was going to save us all.
It was going to die off as soon as it got above 85 outside. And now you go to the hottest places. You know, it's July in Texas and SoCal. I mean, it doesn't get any hotter than this. And now it's now there's a spike. I mean, we were locked down. It was going to go away. Now it's back.
Second wave, second wave. This is the first wave, baby.
I don't know if anyone knows anything anymore, but all right.
Before we move off of Herman Cain, can I make an observation just to see if you guys agree with me or if I'm the only one who feels this way? His verified account, I think Gina alluded to it. 3 days ago, they have the tweet. I actually saw it in my timeline and I remember thinking they're treating with oxygen and stuff. I'm like, oh, that sounds pretty bad. He's been for 3 months, and then at the end it says he really is getting better. He's coming home soon. He's very excited to come home. I was like, oh, I don't know if that's true, but whatever. That, you know, I assumed it was, you know, positive thinking. That's fine. And then that was 3 days ago. Over the next 3 days up till today, his account, and there's an Iron Sheik thing going on here where it's clearly not him. He's probably comatose or dying at this time. In this 3 days, his thing is full of, go past this, just scroll, dozens of hyper-partisan, like, you know, tweets about how these people are evil and these people are awful and getting people just you know, touchstones for political, you know, discourse. And I just feel like that's so distasteful and so gross. Like, this guy is literally dying or dead as you're posting these. There's something like from last night and this morning. That's so ghoulish and gross. Like, who the fuck is doing that? I assume they're doing it with that as knowledge. The guy's literally dying over the course of these 3 days. And it just left me such a bad taste in my mouth. I don't know if I'm on a soapbox or anything, but it's worse than, I don't know, it's so disrespectful.
I agree. Like, I'm picturing myself clinging to life and Lynette's talking about left turn arrows.
And your
Twitter potholes. Feed is still full of all your greatest hits.
The fucking backup beeper in the garbage truck at 6:30 in the morning. She's like hitting all the usual spots, and I'm wondering, people who don't signal, click it or ticket. Yeah, I think it's in poor taste. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird. And
like, who's thinking we gotta get these out while the guy's fucking literally flylining.
I don't know anything anymore. I really don't. I agree. It's gross. Sorry.
Well, I'm gonna just stay on COVID for one more thing, and then we're actually gonna go back to Texas. So British scientists have determined, and I don't know if Dr. Drew's talked about any of this, that there are six different types of COVID-19 distinguished by specific clusters of symptoms.
About COVID? Don't be this person and don't be this nation. We all know this person where someone goes, hey, this weekend we're going to Raging Waters. And everyone kind of goes, yeah, we'll see it. I'll see it. I'll believe it when I see it. You know, the people who just go like, yeah, we're never going to do that. That just means this person fucks up all the time or is late or doesn't do anything. Don't be that nation. Like Russia's like, hey, we got a cure coming out in 2 weeks. We've got a vaccine for COVID. We're like, well, okay.
I'll believe it when I inject it.
Why don't you sober up and come back and then we can talk? It's like, you know, so Russia's that way. Mexico's a little bit that way. China's definitely that way. Sure. Like, here's North what's Korea, going on. Yeah. I'm sure. So if you're like fucking Finland or something, like if you hear Finland just said, 2 weeks, we got a cure for COVID-19. We'd all be fucking chilling the champagne,
tell
right?
Tell me more.
I heard that story four days ago out of Russia, which means we got 10 more days before the cure comes in. And everyone's like, ah, okay. Well, I'm not going to take the mask off just yet. Yeah. Like, don't be one of those nations. It's easy to figure out. All you have to do is say this, and then you go this nation. And if it's the Chinas or the Russias or the North Koreas of the world or the whomevers of the world, you go, okay, well, isn't that sweet? Now, can we have a competent nation verify this? Because we're not really listening to you. So, but if you think, if it came out of Canada, you'd be like, oh,
we're listening.
It's the same news. It's we're going to have a vaccination in 2 weeks. And if it comes out of Canada, we're like, this is the greatest fucking news ever. And if it comes out of Russia, we're like, we'll see. And that story broke, I don't know, 3 days ago or something.
When the vaccine becomes available, and again, we have the entire world working around the clock, which is why they say it usually takes 10, 11 years, and now we're looking at a year and a half. Will you take the first round?
Probably. I guess so. I guess I'll just ask Dr. Drew about it, but I'm sure I will. I don't take the flu shot every year, which I should do. But
Other thing. They said this may be one of those yearly, you need your yearly COVID shot.
Booster shot.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, like a flu, the strain changes every year. What if China does come out with a vaccine? Will you take the first round?
You know, I never even think about this stuff. I'm just like, I'm sure it'll all be vetted before it gets to my main vein. So
The FDA has to approve it to be.
I know, but what about thalidomide? You know, like what about stuff that seemed fine?
Deep pulls, you know.
Yeah, thalidomide, baby.
Someone's been listening to We Didn't Start the Fire.
Oh God! Right, I love that song. But that's the thing. It's like that was supposed to just be a, wasn't that like a convenient drug for morning sickness? Well, who knew?
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, that was back when athletes would smoke and do commercials for Chesterfields and stuff like that. I don't know. I'm not, you know, like again, like my relationship with the government and their decisions is a little dubious right now. But in this department, I'm always just line them up, give them the shots.
Okay. I like it.
Max Zapata, I'm getting ready to make my pilgrimage to Laguna Seca coming up and next week. And I realize I've kind of talked about it a little bit, but I don't know who knows what car I'm taking. I'm taking a car that's different than the car I normally take, a little kind of pea shooter kind of a car. And in the vein of inspired by my trip to Chicago, where all the guys were on quads buzzing up and down the street doing wheelies, I took the thing out to just shake it out a little. Just you know, when you build a race car and you haven't driven it, you want to see how it tracks. Like you want to kind of let go of the steering wheel and see if it pulls to the right or pulls to the left or whatever. And I just, for 30 seconds, just kind of buzz the shop, and we'll play a little shot of it. You can go to amcroll.com and watch it, but you can just hear it here.
Setting off all the alarms.
Oh, there's a good one, Max Fat. You can stop it. There's a good one of me going buy the thing. I think it's the first one.
I'll have to load that one up.
All right, you figure it out.
You're taking the one that looks like when kids learn how to draw cars.
Yes.
Like, side up, side down, side down.
It's a mini little pea shooting box, but the same thrills of driving this little hollowed out little. The rims are 13 inches. Now, I don't know. Gina, your Subaru has 16-inch rims on it, or 18-inch rims. It's like a 13-inch rim. It's a little four-cylinder Japanese box. But when people want to know, like, everyone goes, how fast are you going? How fast are you going? Well, I don't know, but there's 21 other boxes that'll be right next to me going as fast as they can, and that's where the excitement comes. The sound and this raw kind of rough feeling of having no windows in the side and no everyone's on the same tires and doing the same thing. So it's this little, it's a fast, fun little shitbox kind of grouping. And there'll be like 25 guys out there and they'll all just be going for it at the same time. And it's every bit as exciting as the big horsepower, crazy multi-million dollar class that I may normally run in. It's called the Different Drummer 510, and then you get the whole story about this started on the East Coast, and the guy bought it at whatever dealership, and he stripped it and built it for a race car. These cars all have the story. The story starts in 1971. And all these names of all these guys, half of them are dead now, how it competed on the East Coast for all those years and blah, blah, blah. And then you bring them here, you resurrect them, and then you tell the story. All right. Sorry, Gina. Go. Oh, we got the buzz by.
Oh, let's see.
This is a little better. I don't know why that car. I probably set it off.
You're a menace.
I'm a menace to society. All right.
Did you happen to do that at around 3 a.m. in Valley Village last night? Because that something woke me up. That noise, that monstrous noise, like your car, scared the shit out of me. I finally went back to sleep, and then our house almost got knocked over. We were very close to the earthquake.
I have never been prouder of myself than when I had the earthquake. We had an earthquake last night at 4:30 in the morning, mm-hmm. or thereabouts.
Yeah, 4:30.
I got up this morning, and I've been pissed at this for a long time. I've been here since the 72 earthquake. The 72 earthquake was like 5:45, maybe 6 a.m. But you're complete. An earthquake, when you're up and you're on your feet and have a cup of coffee in you and are wearing something is a completely different experience than dreaming about God knows what and being wakened from your sleep. When I was a kid during the 72 earthquake, I was just a little kid. I started dreaming about like war and Nazis, and I thought someone had blown up. I remember specifically I had like blown us up, right? Yeah. That was my dream. And then because it didn't make sense, because if we blew up, we wouldn't just be shaking. I immediately pictured a giant bomb with a fuse that was lit, and the fuse was like, we're shaking and then we're going to blow, you know, and that's my brain was like trying to make sense of it when I was 8 years old. And I woke up and it was dark. Everyone was completely disoriented because everyone was asleep. Then the next one that hit was in 94. Middle of the fucking night, middle of the morning, everyone is passed out and everyone is fucked up, you know, dishes falling from the cabinets in the kitchen and everything. Totally disoriented. And I've said, why can't we have an earthquake at noon or 1 p.m. on a Saturday?
Yeah, convenient. You know what I mean?
And I fucking went and looked that shit up. Last night was 4:30, dead nuts on. I mean, 4:30 in the a.m. is you're never more out of it, especially if you go to bed about 12:30, 1 o'clock, like I do every night. 4:30, I'm as far out of it as you can possibly get. Last night, 4:29 in the morning, the big one we had 25 years before, 4:30.
Brutal.
I looked it up. It said 4:30 in like 55 seconds from expat. The point is well, less than a minute apart, like the two biggest ones we've had here in the last 25 years have both taken place at 4:30 a.m. One took place at 4:29 a.m. in 52 seconds. The other one took place at 4:30. Like, what the fuck? Don't tell me that's not there's not something going on. There's all the hours. Oh, I'm blowing the lid off this shit, man. I'm going full con. I mean, of all the times these things could hit, what the fuck's with 4:30? What's even the fuck with the window between like 3 a.m. and 6 a.m.? Why is that the window for an earthquake? Sorry.
Yeah. Remember the Bay Area earthquake that hit right before the World Series in 89?
Aha!
5:50, right before first pitch. That's a polite earthquake. 5:15 p.m.
Yes, well, that's a courteous earthquake.
Given all three of us, I think I was probably closest to it. It was like a 4.6. So it shook our house. It was terrifying. We run in. I go, let's check on. We got to check on the kid. We run into his room. He's just sitting up because we're terrified. And I was like, oh, he's going to start screaming or crying. And I go, are you okay? Did you feel it? And he goes, it was just an earthquake.
Earthquake.
So that is a California boy. He's not afraid. It's an earthquake and it's no big deal.
Well, ever since I've tore apart so many houses and done earthquake rehab for a job and gotten into the bones of so many houses, I've just, if you live in a dwelling that is framed with wood and has stucco or siding on the outside or anything that's even close to modern or anything that's not masonry, it's only unreinforced masonry. Mm-hmm. That is all. That is your enemy. If you're not reinforced masonry, then you're 100% fine. Apartment building from the 60s, house from the 50s, it doesn't matter. The only thing that ever falls over is the chimney. In an old house, the chimney always falls over. But other than that, unreinforced masonry is it. Anything else, you're completely and utterly fine. There's nothing, and that's why there's never any damage here. When they go to these countries where they have to build everything out of cinder block and brick and stuff like that, they're destroyed. Because masonry is what goes. It's all flexibility. That's all engineering is, like a suspension bridge. Sorry.
Well, and that's the irony, I would imagine, because our house, which is all wood, and, you know, like when we're at work and, you know, these tall buildings at KFI and you really feel it shake, I guess the more you feel it shake, the safer you are because it's moving with the earth.
It's all,
you know what I mean?
Yes, it's all, you want to be taffy and not matzah. Sorry, Gina, I know that sounds like a hate crime.
It's been said many times.
I know. All right.
You want to be leavened.
That's right. You want to be leavened. It's obviously, we all do. All right, let me hit Madison Reed Mister here. Oh, man, this stuff is good. Now, they've been making hair coloring for women for a long time, and they do a pretty kick-ass job on that, and they spread it out to the fellas, and it's nice, man, especially if you're like me and you got some of that gray kicking up around the temples and beyond. You don't have the shoe polish look. You have the natural look, and I just wanted a little more pepper mixed in with my salt, and I used it, and it worked nicely. The whole packet comes in a little box, got the gloves, put the gloves on. You just take the color gel, comes in a little like Mylar packet, and you put a little color gel in your gloves, and you kind of wipe your hands back and forth, and you just run your hands through your hair. Just run them through your hair. Then you do the activator, same thing, just a little cream, you run it through your hair. Sit there, 10 minutes, rinse it off, and it's natural looking. You get the gray goes away, but it's not that Sharpie kind of John Travolta-y look. It's just a natural way to do it. And they got you covered over there at Madison Reed Mister. Right, Dawson?
Go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMR.com. And use code Adam for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam.
Let's do one more. Gina Grad, or sorry, I cut you off on your other COVID case.
No, that's... That's okay. Let's move on to this one in case you haven't heard. Is there one more seat available on that private jet? Because Joe Rogan might want to go with you. Mm. He says he's moving to Texas in search of more freedom, according to MySanAntonio.com. His podcast, he said this on the Joe Rogan Experience. He announced the news of his relocation from LA to Texas on Friday. And Rogan cited overpopulation, traffic, economic despair, and his need for more freedom among the reasons for his decision. He's 52. He also does the UFC commentating. He reportedly stands to save millions of dollars in taxes. And just to give you a little example of that, Rogan signed a deal in May with Spotify for more than $100 million to air his podcast exclusively on the streaming service beginning September. That's according to the Wall Street Journal. The HoustonChronicle.com says while the deal would be subject to a 13.3% income tax rate in California, Texas forgoes individual income taxes, resulting in $13 million in tax breaks.
Yeah. Everybody I know that's got a couple of nickels to rub together is kind of looking toward an exit strategy. I was talking to Mike August about this earlier today, not about Joe or Texas per se, but kind of saying, are we just going to keep going down this road? And then what happens when you move to Texas? But then he says Texas and some of these countries are going to secede. Like, they're going to try to break it up at a certain point. It'll be an interesting next. It'll be an interesting lifetime for my kids. But people really, California and L.A. has seen it before with productions that left town, runaway production. The exact same model applies. They just got a little grabby with the taxes and a little overregulated, and they made it a little too difficult. And the people who love this country and who love, ostensibly, keep talking about paying more in taxes and are always very charitable on that side of the aisle, they all picked up and left. They came back to where their houses were, but they dropped off all the money in the Carolinas and
Toronto,
everywhere. And so they fled. So if that group, if Hollywood will get on an airplane and leave to do business, eventually the Joe Rogans and the Mark Garriguses and folks like that are just going to get up and leave. They're just going to leave. And we've proven it once and not too long ago. So I don't know why they don't have those kinds of discussions. Like, there used to be, California used to be a little bit of a monopoly. We just like, hey, where are you going to go? Like, you're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. You can't. It's not even practical. Well, you know, Mark Garagos has a private jet at his disposal, and maybe the internet, maybe air conditioning, 80-inch plasma TVs, U-porn, and the internet in general, just and Zooming, maybe. Maybe it doesn't matter where you live anymore.
Yeah, the COVID lockdowns are proving that you can work from anywhere in a lot of jobs.
And you can go. So when I was growing up, if you're a Hollywood guy, you can't live outside of L.A. There's no good steakhouses, or there's no good nightlife, or there's no, or maybe you like Chick-fil-A, or, you know, there's a big brand that you like. You know, it was sort of like you couldn't buy Levi's at a Sears. You had to buy Tough Skins. Well, now you just buy Levi's online and you can go eat wherever you want. And all these places that seem kind of podunky, they're not so podunky anymore. Nashville's a big, beautiful town, lots of good restaurants, lots of good entertainment. And the list goes on and on. These places.
Oh, yeah. Milwaukee, Kansas City. I mean, right. Tons of these places are great.
Right. So now that all the other locales have become a little more attractive through taxes or regulation or the lack thereof and or the culture, in L.A. and Los Angeles, California, are sort of on the decline. They're going to see a lot of this. And when they see a lot of it, they're going to see a tax base go. Like right now, 13% seems pretty darn good, not to the guy who's cutting the check, but it seems pretty good to California. But you're going to get zero. I know 5% sounds low to you when you're 13%, but You know, it's less than 5%. Zero. I sound like Nancy Grace. Now, Nancy, what would that sound like?
I know that 5% sounds low to you, but guess what? I'm not a mathematician, and I'm willing to bet that you're not either. But guess what's lower than 5%? I'll give you one guess. Zero. Zero. That's what's lower than 5%.
Yeah. Sometimes I say things, and I realize I sound like the people I make fun of when I'm saying it, in the middle of saying it. But they're going to get there. New York's having a problem with their heavy hitters leaving, their big tax base people getting out and going to Florida and stuff. And I think maybe a year or so ago, but Cuomo was basically just laying it out. He was like, hey, man, we need this tax money. You guys are leaving. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of what people do now. And the notion of travel is so much more comfortable. People, there was no Airbnb. There's no Southwest. There was no people. No one had a second house in Palm Springs or in Nevada or wherever. Like, no one had any of that. And now it seems also plausible now, right?
Doable.
Like, it seems very doable now. And California is going to have to kind of wake up to the notion that they're kind of living 25 years ago. This is now. People work from home, travel all the time, do whatever. And there's going to be more of this. And unfortunately, it will be your tax base. It's going to be the people that are paying the most that are leaving. The people you're getting the most from, you're going to get zero from. And the people who are rely on the state, they're not going anywhere. So there's going to be a math that's might not work out for the state. All right, Gina, let's bring it home.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news. Gina
Grad. That was the news with Gina Grad.
Simply Safe 60 here. Yeah, Simply Safe. Most home security companies trap you with high prices, tricky contracts, lousy customer support. There's one security company that's a no-brainer. That's Simply Safe. Two eyes in there. Everything to protect your home, an arsenal of sensors and cameras for every room, window and door, tailored specifically to your home. So you go online, you set it up, you figure out how many windows and doors and motion detectors you want, and then peel and stick, up and running in under half an hour in most cases. You plug in the main brain, and everything else runs off batteries. No drilling, no pulling wires. Batteries last up to 10 years. Professional monitoring day and night, ready to send police, fire, medical professionals if there's an issue. Get going with no long-term contracts and get it up and running lickety-split. And no sales guys, no fine print. Starts at just $15 a month. Simply Safe, right, Dawson?
Head to simplysafe.com/Adam and get a free HD camera for our listeners. That's simplysafe.com/Adam to make sure they know our show sent you.
All right. I'm going to be in San Antonio. I don't know if I brought that up. Tonight, tomorrow night, live podcast. We'll do those Friday. Today, we'll have Ben Shapiro on, and then Greg Gutfeld will be on Saturday, and we'll do the live stuff. Then we'll do stand-up. I'll do stand-up after that, so you can enjoy that. Those shows will air on Monday and Tuesday, by the way, so they'll have some fresh material at the top of the week over there. You can go to adamcarolla.com for all the live shows, and you can get I'm your emotional support animal, I think. Yeah, there it is. Not dog. Jumped in my head. I don't know the name of my own book, but give it a rating at Amazon. I read them and I enjoy them. I want to thank Eric Vaughn and Patrick Lovell for coming in here. The five-part docuseries, The Con. You can catch that at The Con, or catch up on it at thecon.tv. And, of course, Def Rat Guy as well. Check out Mr. Macho Man, the single on YouTube, sung by his friend, close friend, Josh Gardner. All right. So, until next time, this is Adam for Eric and Patrick and Def and Gene and Bald saying mahalo.
Stick around. Good Sports with Dave Damaschek and Adam Carolla is coming up next.
Podcast One Sports Network presents
Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to the Friday edition of Good Sports. Dave Damashek here, Adam Carolla over there. Quick reminder, make sure you're checking out Dave's of Thunder, available wherever you find your podcasts and or davesofthunder.com. Good times with Feeney and Birdbath Gary and Lil Donovan, the whole gang. Ace, how are you doing on this Friday?
I couldn't be better, Sheck.
Excellent. You know, we were talking with our pal Cousin Sal on yesterday's episode, having some fun. And one of the things in baseball that really is striking, of course, you can't turn it on for 30 seconds without feeling how weird it is. My opinion is beggars can't be choosers. I'm glad to have sports. We've been shut in for 5 months. I'm not going to start belly aching immediately about some of the oddball stuff around them. But the weirdest is these cardboard cutouts. Have you seen those? Have you watched any baseball yet?
Yeah.
I think they're not being creative enough with them, you know?
It feels very Sergeant Pepper's to me. It feels like if you picture the album, the cover art of Sergeant Pepper's, that's kind of what it reminds me of. So it's like it's a bygone era. It just feels a little off-putting, and I'm trying to kind of figure out who's out there sometimes. It's like it's almost a little distracting, but a little unnecessary. I know the Dodgers are doing it, but not everyone's doing it, right?
I'm not sure how many. The thing I don't like is that some networks or somebody they're like doing, I think, computer generated fans. So like when there's a home run or a ball in the outfield, you see these like video game kind of people in the outfield bleachers. It's very weird. I think though, and I really think this would be super funny. And why wouldn't you do this? Teams like the Celtics allegedly used to keep the visiting locker room like super hot. And, right. and the water wasn't warm and all that kind of stuff. But playing into that spirit, shouldn't the teams, the home team, find out about like all the ex-girlfriends of the other team and the parole officers and otherwise, and just put them right over the dugout? So every time they step into the batter's circle, they're like, oh wow, it would spook them a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, they kind of do, you know, obviously there's a version of that with the field goals and the extra points when you're the other team's up on their feet, smacking the thunder sticks together and all that kind of crap. It strikes me as I think about MLB, the difference between, so baseball players don't need a crowd. I would argue they don't need the sound effects. They don't need the cutouts behind home plate. They don't need any of that because take the three major sports. You know, you take basketball, football, and baseball, right? I know this just in small effect from playing baseball and playing football in high school. First things first, you play high school baseball, there is no crowd. It's usually during the day. I mean, I'm not going to go. There may be places in the country where it's a big deal or something like that. But by and large, you play during the day. You play oftentimes during school hours. Like we'd have games at 2 p.m. or something like that. There was no bleachers filled. There's no stadium. Again, I'm sure there's some stuff that goes on in Texas that would, you know, that would crap on this point. But I'm saying by and large, you do Friday Night Lights. You have homecoming. Mm-hmm. You have the whole nine yards. You have an audience out there. Like you play in front of bleachers filled with this Friday Night Lights. Then you go off to college and you play at the next level. Now you're playing in big venues and big stadiums and whatever. Even if you're not with a big time program. Look, if you're in a big time program, you have more people there than you do at an NFL stadium. If you're in a big time Michigan or LSU or some stuff
literally
like that.
Literally by 25,000. Yeah, that's true.
Right. And then you go to the NFL. So in baseball, there's nobody at the high school level. There's nobody in the crowds. You get to college. I mean, maybe at the World Series, but not just day in and day out at college. Even if you're at a good school or with a good program, I don't think you have swarms of people out there. So baseball, I would argue, doesn't need it. They're not used to it.
I agree. The nature of it, and also I think you're kind of thinking about the thing that is relatable about it. This experience, these first handful of games, it strikes me as like it kind of feels like a softball game, you know, like when it was your birthday once and, you know, 20 of us showed up and we got some pizzas and beer and we played. So it could feel that way. And they almost really should mic. I know you can't mic the skipper for strategy and stuff, but it would be fun to hear what they're saying to each other. Football is going to be the most negatively impacted of all the sports. I agree with you. You need that energy of the home crowd.
Yeah, they they had NASCAR and they kind of spread it out, the audience, and seemed to work. I mean, they're doing all this stuff where they just, you know, spread it out. I mean, the just take, you know, an 80,000 arena and let in 30,000 people or whatever the math is and spread them out.
It's also, but the thing that is maybe the silver lining, Ace, is maybe your dream will come true of shortening the baseball season. 60 games, if we get even that many, for every team. Like, maybe it'll be so satisfying to the consumer that they'll be like, enough with this 162 jive. What are we doing that for anymore?
Yeah, it'd be nice. I think I was watching SportsCenter last night, and the umpire was jawing with the skipper, and they had to put their mask on while they ran at each other. It's kind of insane. Also, he threw a guy out. I think it was a pitcher on the Pirates game. Yeah, he threw that guy out. He threw that guy out from 100 feet away. I don't know what that guy said.
He was sitting in the stands. The bullpen now, guys, that's what their job should be, is to be the hecklers in the crowd.
Yes. Also, the ball was 7 inches out of the strike zone. Like, I don't know why the guy sitting 85 feet away is complaining in game number 4 of the endless season that ball was in the strike zone when it was well below it. It seemed like a weird thing to argue. It seemed like he was too far away to make that argument. I don't know why why did the skipper have to run out onto the field? It all felt a little unnecessary to me.
It is so weird. And then the announcers, well, you get who deserves the shout out are the broadcast team so far, because it's kind of hard. If I didn't know in advance that they're not even there at the ballparks, I don't think I would know. But I would think that's got to be super hard to fake it, like watching on TV. It feels like that movie 8 Men Out or whatever it was forever ago, of like them in a completely different location calling the action as though it were live.
Yeah, it's also, you hear, and what are they doing? I'm trying to think, like, what are they doing in Japan? Is the baseball season going on in Japan? Are they letting people out into the stands? And again, I feel like, I don't know why it has to be an on-off, like a toggle switch. I feel like it could be a dimmer switch. I feel like, you know, hey, Yankee Stadium with 10,000 people in it seems pretty spread out to me, and God bless the 10,000 who got to have, you know, no long lines at the beer in the beer garden or any of that stuff. Like, why, you know, or the skybox? Why not open the skybox? The guy's there with his family or whatever it is.
I agree with all of this, and although it is very strange that some places have already declared we're not going to have home games here. Like Jersey has said that the Jets and Giants will not have any fans. I mean, that's going to be crazy. So conceivably, I mean, imagine the home field advantage then. If you're the Chiefs and you get to have some percentage of fans, but it's completely empty. That's such a decided. The whole thing is going to be weird. But, you know, back to my original point, beggars can't be choosers. We got sports. Let's appreciate them while we can.
I got to say, I agree. Japan was back in June with cutouts. No humans in crowd. And also, after seeing a couple of UFC bouts on Fight Island with no crowd, it's not hurt the competition or the experience at all. I'll tell you what does hurt is on the pay-per-view, during the fight, they have live reads now. They have 10-second live reads.
Really?
Yes, with a little corner of the movie that's coming out, you know, Greyhound with Tom Hanks coming to Sony Plus this weekend. And like during the action, like, I mean, you can conceivably definitely miss some action in there.
Yeah, they do it. I've seen it too, and they'll like say the fight clock is sponsored by, and it's like the fight has just started.
Right.
It's very distracting.
There's advertising all over the octagon and all around the octagon and all that kind of stuff, which, like, I get this part of the world where it all kind of seeps in. I get it. And I also get the part where it's like, hey, I'm watching NASCAR and the car is sponsored by Tide, but I'm sitting at home watching NASCAR for free. That's the deal. I paid $68 for the pay-per-view, and I'm getting the commercials between the rounds, but I'm getting commercials during the rounds, during the fight.
That's crazy. I hope that goes the way of the dodo bird, much like usually once the marketers and the advertisers get their grips on something, it's there to stay and you just have to get used to it. One thing that didn't hold up very long was, remember when boxers were wearing, like, it was like
Golden
painted
Palace.
Onto their back.
Golden Palace.
That went away. I don't think anybody does that anymore, right?
No, they don't do that anymore. They couldn't stop it for a while, but. And Gary, I don't know if you can find a clip of it. It's probably nothing online, but it's pretty interesting that they literally ran. It wasn't a crawl. It was a spoken live read for a movie in the middle of the round.
That's going to be pretty tough. UFC is very hardcore about their pay-per-view stuff. So
I can imagine that. At some point, we're just going to evolve into the actual fighters having to do the live reads themselves during the round. Like, they're just going to have to go ahead and yell, you know, after this fight, I'm going to the Golden Corral buffet where I can load up on shrimp scampi. Just going to have to yell it at the other guy.
Ortega's cruising to an easy victory here. And speaking of cruise, Top Gun 2 coming out in theaters to you this Friday. Like,
that's
kind of
literally what they're doing now. It's nuts.
That's ridiculous. All right, listen. Good times. Sports is back, and I'm going to appreciate it. Ace, good times as always. Kibitzin with you.
Yep.
We'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce for you next week. Until then, thanks so much, sports fans. Good sports out.
Good sports.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere. Get the links at adamcarolla.com.
Welcome to Fandemic 2020, presented by Bet Online. I'm your host, Bram Weinstein. We have an amazing panel of guests today. You see Harold Reynolds, who played infield in Major League Baseball for a number of years. You can see him every day on the MLB Network these days in his prestigious broadcasting career. Eddie George won the Heisman Trophy back in the 1990s, one of the best running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history. And Robert Horry is one of the most clutch basketball players in NBA playoff history, a number of different championships with three different teams over 16 years. Hi to all of you. Thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me also.
All right, let's switch over to fans and let's talk about what that looks like, what that feels like. Eddie, you played at Ohio State, so you played at one of the most iconic, legendary venues that there is in American sport. You played in the NFL as well. So let's start with you here. The idea of playing football games without fans, that feels like what to you?
So I know what it feels like, and it's not fun. It's you need the energy to feed off of. Your whether you're home or your home video, you need the fans to support you when you're down. You're trying to figure out how to force through adversity as a team, and you need the fan support. And also when you're on the road, you know the opposing teams feed off of that same type of energy. So the fans are very much a part of sports like anything else. They are definitely they play a role in it. And that's the whole point, is the give and take. That's why they have home field advantage or home court advantage or home field advantage. It's definitely a feel to it. So what you're going to see is it's going to feel like a spring practice, if you will. It's going to feel like a glorified scrimmage. It's not going to have very much meaning without the fans. It's going to be a different feel.
Robert, for you, I mean, for your league, they're going right into the playoffs and there's no fans. What was your experience like? having fans in the stands for playoff games? And what does it mean to you to not have them in what is the biggest moments of the season for the NBA?
Well, for me, I fed on fans' energy, and I also love going into different like the visiting team's arena and shutting them up, because it was nothing more satisfying than shutting them up and you know, having that thrill. But I think sometimes people don't understand how much as athletes we need fans. We love fans, and we appreciate them greatly. I know a lot of times we can act like we don't by not signing an autograph, but we really appreciate fans because they give us that energy in the fourth quarter, and they let us and they excite us to get over that mountaintop. I think about when we played Portland in Game 7 of Western Conference Finals, and Game 4, or Game 7 in the fourth quarter. You know, we down 20 points, but we got those fans behind us to come through and make them nervous. You know, that helped us. That's why you play for home court advantages, for these moments like this, when you need those fans behind you to get you over the top. So it's hard to play without fans, but I will say this. Without fans, you're going to see who is the best. You can see who has the heart and the mindset to get over the top, because they don't have the fans to push them or give them that extra mile. So now the true talented people are going to come through at the end.
I got to tell you, though, I mean, Harold, I mean, as a fan, that is one of the unintended good consequences here of all of this. That we get to hear the things that we've always wanted to hear that we weren't sure was ever really going on.
Hey, Eddie, I'm curious. With in football, so much of the vocabulary is shared from team to team.
Yeah.
Like your audible in plays and stuff like that. How will that play?
That's a great point, because, you know, the Patriots, they got in trouble for getting their audibles. They're getting their signals. They're knowing when they're checking. They're getting – so that's going to be interesting, because to have the crowd noise to mute that out helps. And you can't pick up on things. But when you can pick up, like, check with me, you know, going right, you know, Wrangler and lefty, whatever it is. I mean, you can pick up on those things. So I think the NFL, in terms of game planning, week to week, they're going to have to change up their vocabulary to communicate what they want from play to play. And it's going to be interesting to see how that happens.
From a health perspective, we've established you guys, to some level, would miss the fans in their presence. But what concern do you have about people being in the stands in general?
Well, I think if you want to get through the season, it's going to have to be without fans, because you can't risk a fan coming down shaking somebody's hand. Your natural reaction, somebody says hi to you, you want to reach out your hand, right? Fist pump, whatever. What happens if a player contacts COVID through a fan? You're going to contact all the fans, and you're going to shut the team down? I just think it's difficult enough to keep the team clean and healthy and not to involve fans. And I know that's not what everybody wants to hear, but I think that's where we're at right now. And like I said, this is ever evolving. Who knows? By the time we get to September, it might totally be different. But I think for now, as we're starting up and trying to just get players on the field, I find it difficult to think they're not going to interact with fans. It's just a natural thing to do. So I think that complicates the problem. That's just my thought.
Eddie, what about you? You said you fed off the fans. You liked having them there. With the public health and your personal health, if you were playing at risk, how do you feel about the idea of fans being in the stands?
I think it can be done. I think if you can find the right capacity and you can begin to kind of tarp off different sections of the stadium, because not every, even in normal time, not every stadium is going to be full anyway. So it's only certain markets, certain places. And I think teams that are at full capacity on the average need to have those plans out. I think if fans come in with masks on, they provide hand sanitizers, they're laid out a certain protocol that there are no player-fan interactions, there are no autographs, lay all the rules out on the table, I think it can be done appropriately. I think if you can somehow manage the concessions, you know, 6 feet distance, making sure people go in one way all the time, that they're not all over the place. If you can provide that in terms of a stadium environment and that experience, it can be done. I don't think the players can necessarily attract COVID. I'm not an expert. I'm not a doctor. Through fan interaction, just by them being there, it's more on the field that from other players they can get it. But in terms of having fans in the stands, it can be done if it's done appropriately, responsibly, and it has to be well thought out. And they have to check, be able to check the temperatures of people, do a testing and a screening prior to that. I think it can be done.
Harold, would you play? Would you have played?
Would I have played? Yeah, I probably would have. You know, I was single throughout most of my career. I mean, through all my career, I was single. I didn't get married until after baseball. So, yeah, I probably would have played. I can understand guys that have the challenges, though, because of the fact that, well, you look at Mike Trout. You know, his wife is expecting their first child in August. And I remember being in spring training before the shutdown, talking to Mike, and he was so ecstatic about being home and asking me, what was it like in the delivery room when your kids were born? And he was all enthusiastic about all that. That's something you think about forever, yeah. Particularly with the first one. And so now, knowing that the date was going to be in August, he was like, I'll probably miss a couple games, but I'll be back. Then the pandemic hits, and he's thrown into this whole decision of what is he going to do? And I'll throw this at you guys real quick. The challenge for these players is not taking care of yourself. It's all your teammates. Everybody's in it. So I don't know what they're doing when they leave and who they're around and everything else. I think that's what presents even more of a challenge with contact testing, where if someone all of a sudden outside of your sphere has had contact with somebody, now you all of a sudden you got to get quarantined. And so those are the challenges. And I know that's what Mike Trout is really struggling with. So that said, and that long answer, being single, no kids all through my career, yeah, I'd probably play. But had I had family, like Robert was talking about, it presents a different challenge.
Robert, would you have played if you were still playing right now? Would you play?
I probably would have because, it also depends on where I am at my career. You know, if I'm like 5 years in, 10 years in, or like if it was like 16 years at the end of my career, I wouldn't do it just because I know I'm older. I know my wife had heart issues and I got a young kid at home. So I probably wouldn't play. And plus, I've made enough money that I didn't have to play. So it that makes a big difference on where you are. My career was established. So, you know, it's hard to say, you know, and plus I had 7 championships. So I'm not trying to win another one, you know, but. And it's hard to say, man, because you love the game of basketball. You love your sport and you want to get out there and show your craft and do your craft at the best of its ability. And it would be one of those things you have to really sit down with your family and discuss it and see what they want you to do. And it would be hard. But for me, and I know me and my wife, I would have said, no, I'm not playing because, I played enough and my life and my family life is more important than getting some, you know, playing a basketball game.
All right, let's end on a big picture question. Optimistically, all of the leagues you're going to play, all of them are going to crown a champion. Harold, I want you to go last because baseball is such a unique position with how they're structuring their schedule and all of that stuff this year. But let's start with the NBA since they would be the first to literally crown a champion if they can play. Is there an asterisk, Robert, for whoever wins this thing this year?
You know, I played in the 1999 season where, you know, we want to put an asterisk by the San Antonio Spurs season because it was a lockout. I think anytime you win a championship is a great accomplishment. So there shouldn't be an asterisk. It's not like like half the guys didn't try to compete and play, but everybody's out to compete and everybody has the same advantage that you have. I'm not one of these guys that believe in the asterisk. I think if you get out there and compete and you do what you're supposed to do to try to win the championship, you win that championship. You played hard as an individual. You did your thing. I know a lot of people, I guarantee you, if your team doesn't win it, you're going to say it. And if your team does win it, he goes like, oh, it's not an asterisk season. We compete like everybody else. So I think when you say asterisk, that's just bad because everybody had the same opportunity to go out and compete and win the championship. And you should have put yourself in a position to have the best advantage possible to win a championship.
All right, big thank you to our panel today. Harold Reynolds, who you can, of course, see on the MLB Network, played a number of years in the majors. Eddie George, a Heisman Trophy winner, of course, one of the greatest running backs in Houston Oilers, Tennessee Titans history, and Robert Horry, one of the most clutch shooters in the history of the NBA, a winner of 7 championships, and has the rest of them so jealous because he's got 7 rings. Thank you guys so much for joining us today. And to the fans out there, thank you for joining us for Fandemic 2020, brought to you by Bet Online.